PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Welcome to the Worst Golf Podcast. Everybody wants to be the best. We strive to be the worst. When a bad take is necessary, we're going to be here to share it with you. I'm your host, JB, and with me is Morgan. She'll spend a lot of her time off camera, but she's here to keep me in line with all those buttons. Before we get started, I want to remind everybody to subscribe. Hit that little bell if you're watching on YouTube, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. Like the video and give us a review. It helps way more than you know. Morgan, this week we are not live again.
Nope.
I know that people enjoy the live shows probably more than the recorded. We apologize. Just kind of a crazy travel schedule. We do have a special show coming next week that we're probably going to do on the fly.
Yes.
We haven't quite figured out the logistics yet, but we're going to be in California doing some 2023 planning. So we thought it would be a good time to kind of wing it and figure it out from there, whether that's us in a hotel room, whether that's at one of our partners, or what it is. You have any thoughts on that?
I kind of feel like every show we're just winging it. So what's the difference, right?
I mean, that's what makes this the worst.
Exactly.
Right?
So I kind of think, you know, it'll be the same.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
So this week, I wanted to talk about something that has popped into my head for a while now.
Okay.
And let me first say, I've mentioned this to a couple of our partners that we work with and do events with, and they both are like, this is a great idea, blah, blah, blah. And of course, nothing's ever going to come of it. But you're an NFL fan.
I am.
And you see kids nowadays, they wear their batting gloves and football gloves everywhere.
They do?
Like, you know, oh, yeah. You go down to where we'll walk Arrow down to where the school bus picks up the kids in our neighborhood. They'll have their gloves on.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I definitely have not noticed that. I should pay better attention.
And if you watch the NFL, you see the trend in gloves over the last few years to have a design quality to them.
Yes, which I think they look so cool.
Golf gloves in general have gone to that a little bit. You'll see some other colors. You'll see, like, the one we have back here that I'm pointing to from Quator for our audio listeners. Quator by Travis Matthew. They make some of the best gloves you'll ever try. But they have a glove there that's super soft, and it's got, you know, some graphics on it and things like that, some words. And all of these companies have kind of gone to that. I mean, yes, there's still the traditional FootJoy plain white glove, or, you know, whatever color you choose. But there's other brands like Asher and others that have done some fun things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, rain gloves, because of the use, obviously, have not changed. They're all pretty much solid color, a lot of them black, with just a logo. Because, you know, no company's going to sell something without a logo on there.
Of course.
Yet, if you watch the NFL, for brands to get noticed, they have the thing where I just hit my mic. So for the viewers that are watching, you will see this, where you put the two gloves together and it makes the team logo or a Nike logo or whatever, fill in the blank brand.
We should have had a picture ready for this one.
Well, don't worry. The people, since it is recorded, I do have a picture ready, and they're actually seeing that picture starting right about now.
Okay.
I mocked these up myself. There's no brand affiliation. I happened to choose two logos that were sitting on my desktop, which was Mizuno and Callaway. And I mocked these up so you can see kind of what I'm talking about. And I mocked these up straight up in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So don't think of it like that. But how cool would it be to have your rain glove having something other than just plain black?
Yeah, I like the idea. I can see why somebody hasn't done it, because most golfers don't wear gloves in both hands.
Right, but the rain glove you do.
Well, yeah, no, I know.
The rain glove is, and this is specific for rain
gloves. Oh, you're
talking
specifically
for rain gloves.
Okay.
And I'm going to take it a step further. Think about the what could be.
Oh,
when,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you. I just cut you off, but I had this idea. But I just had this idea, because you could do, they do all this like custom stuff now. You could have like your kid or your dog or like,
yeah,
something.
But that's not what I'm talking about here. Yes, that could work. You could do that.
Well, you burst in my bubble.
But think of this from the manufacturer who does it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the one tournament every year where you can almost count on the weather being terrible?
The Open.
Yeah,
I was going to
say
British Open. I was
the Open Championship.
Yeah, I was going to say the British Open, and then I paused because I was trying to say just the Open.
Yeah. Now think of one of their staff members grabs his rain gloves before the round and holds it up and does the logo on the first tee.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
They will sell tons of them.
Probably.
Now, the reason this comes to be is people said they like to hear the business side of golf. And one of the business sides is gloves. And gloves are dominated by a single brand.
Really?
Yeah. FootJoy dominates the glove market. Now, there are other brands that do really well. Don't get me wrong. But like FootJoy shoes, which people would blow their mind if they knew the market share of FootJoy shoes, which is at times 50% of all golf shoes sold.
Like, which is 50% might not sound like a lot, but that's an astronomical number.
Yeah,
like,
it's a huge number.
That's crazy.
And we're going to get into market share in a little bit because I think people have a few myths and misnomers about how it's calculated and everything else. But FootJoy owns the glove market share. Other brands, like I said, have done extremely well, especially recently, Callaway, TaylorMade, and a few others. But FootJoy has done extremely well in the glove market share, partly because they're everywhere and everybody knows them.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Titleist and FootJoy are connected there with the market share. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's the case.
To go back to an idea that you had a while back, those would be perfect in your vending machine.
Yes.
These would be great in the vending machine,
yes.
Right?
Grab your rain gloves. You don't need a store clerk. The vending machine is there. If the rain comes, you have your rain gloves. So I had this idea, and think about like the British Open golfer, Open Championship golfer going like this, showing off his brand. And the rest is history. Now, again, this is going nowhere. So, but
and if it does, you're gonna want some royalties.
I don't want the credit. I really? Want the gloves.
Okay.
Whoever brand does this, I don't care if I get the credit. Send me a couple of pairs and we're good. But a brand should do this, and I've mentioned it to a couple and. As you can see, there's a couple graphics that I created, but I want to hear from you guys. Do you guys care at all, or am I a weirdo? I'd love to know your thoughts on should the rain gloves be done this style? And I know rain gloves aren't used all the time, but it's the beginning of an expansion of making gloves cool. I need a hat that says make gloves cool again.
yeah, that'd be different.
so it's just something I've been thinking about, and I think would be a really cool idea. It wouldn't up the cost too much, but it would show some fun factor to it.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun.
Yes, I like
fun. This is a great transition. Coming up on this show as we move towards the holidays, which I know is one of your favorite times of the year.
It is.
We're going to have a special episode where Ryan Liberty from Budget Golf is going to join us.
Okay.
We will bring him into a live stream and we're going to give shit away. And excuse my language. We're going to give some stuff away. Ryan said he's in the giving spirit. He loves this community, and we're going to give away some fun budget golf stuff. So you're going to stay tuned to that. We're still going to do our holiday cheer that we do every year, but we're going to have some fun with budget golf.
So this is an addition too.
Yes.
That's
this
exciting.
This is addition too. Oh, we'll call it adjacent and probably better than you know what we do with holiday cheer. But Ryan's going to be here. We're going to do it live. So it's an episode you're going to have to tune into. To be a part of.
All right. Take note, people.
Yeah. We will have plenty of time ahead of time or plenty of...
notice.
Notice. Thank you.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Plenty of notice ahead of time on kind of how we're going to do it and what we're going to give away and everything like that. But not fun is your get off the lawn segment. And
no.
It's time for that. So
all right.
I am so in agreement of this.
Yeah.
So go on.
Okay. This is a good one. You ever walk through the grocery store, a department store, a gas station? I don't care where you are. And there's somebody over there holding their phone, talking into it. Speakerphone. I don't need to hear your conversation. I don't care about your conversation. Go sit in your car, have your conversation, then come back into the store. I can't stand it. I also don't like it when people are on the phone in the checkout line at the grocery store or Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever. Get off your phone. Pay attention to the human being standing in front of you and then go talk to that person. It's so rude. It drives me crazy.
It is such a lack of respect to the person that's taking care of your stuff that you can't take 3 minutes to pay for your groceries or lumber or whatever you're buying. To talk to your girlfriend about how drunk you got last night. By the way, it's almost always a woman.
I'm going to agree with you there.
Yeah,
once
in a while, there's a man. And by the way, we just mentioned Ryan Liberty. I rode in a car with him once.
Yeah.
And he literally had his speakerphone sitting on his lap. And in his pocket were his AirPods. I was like, are you kidding me? I don't want to hear
Ryan,
your conversation.
No.
But get off your speakerphone.
Yeah, it's just rude.
It's really
so
is.
Rude.
What's the worst offense you've seen? Because I have a really good one.
Oh, I feel like one time I was at the grocery store. I'm there a lot. And somebody was having like a fight with a spouse or significant other or whatever. And they were having trouble getting their card to work at the same time, but wouldn't get off the phone to try to deal with that. And it was just, it was brutal. Like just truly, absolutely brutal. And I'm just like, get off your phone or walk out of the line, but you're holding up all these people so you can yell at your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever it is on the other line. And your card is not working at the same time. Like, pay attention.
Yeah, that's a bad one. I had one once. I was living in Connecticut at the time. And
did they have cell phones back then?
Yes, they had cell phones back then.
Just messing with you.
Actually, the year I was there, the iPhone had just come out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They called it the Jesus phone at the time. I had a person standing in front of me. And I was at like a hardware store, but not a big box one. It was like a small True Value or Ace Hardware.
Sure.
And this woman was trying to get keys made, and they did it at like the counter. There was no machines back then. They did it at the counter, you know, when you're going to pay. And she was screaming on her phone that, quote, for our video watchers, that the girl that was with her baby daddy last night was going to get stabbed later.
Oh, that seems like a good thing to say out loud.
And she leaves, and she never got off the phone, screaming into the thing. And the person behind the register said, "Boy, am I glad I'm not the baby daddy." And I still to this day laugh at that, you know, because it was just so nonchalant, straight faced, and everything else.
That's good.
But that is a good get off my lawn segment, because people need to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's really, really rude. Nobody wants to hear your conversation. Nobody.
We mentioned gloves and rain gloves specifically, talking about that. And I wanted to ask the audience, listeners, viewers, whatever it is, about gloves in general and how you choose them.
That's a good question, because I feel like some people just, oh, this is my size. I'm good.
I asked a question on, maybe it was the forum. I can't remember if it was the THP forum or social media a while back, about choosing your glove. And is it, I always found the answer to be one of three things.
Mm-hmm.
Either I buy the cheapest glove I can find,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to shout out to user forum member M Ward, who showed up to me wearing this glove that had this blue and yellow logo that looked like it was a kid's toy logo. Like it was massive.
Okay.
And he said, "What do you want for $3? And you could just tell this thing was made out of cat or something like that. It was awful. They either choose based on price.
Mm-hmm.
They choose based on brand affiliation, meaning they play Titleist clubs, so they have a Titleist glove.
Makes
or
sense.
So on and so forth. Or they choose based on the bulk buy. And I know there's a lot of people who use like the Callaway Dawn Patrol glove,
mm-hmm.
that it was found at Costco for a while. It might still be there. I don't know. So they do based on the bulk buy. But how else do other people choose? So, you know, like, is there something to it?
Do you think that it could be location dependent too? Because like people who live in the warmer areas where it's super, like where we are, where it's humid and it's hot, they're going to pick their glove based off of the conditions that they generally play in, or someplace that some people who play in like wetter areas or something like that. Could that be possible?
I think it should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would make sense to me.
But the answer is no, I don't.
Really?
Yeah. I think that the Titleist FootJoy glove is synonymous in this world because, and they're market share in regular gloves is extremely high, like it is in rain gloves that we were talking about earlier. You want to add something?
Well, yeah, I had a question.
Sure.
Do you think that, because I've obviously not worn a ton of gloves, so are there gloves that someone might say, like, these just fit me better?
I think there's some of that.
You know, like, I bought this one time. It's fit me well. It's, you know, I don't have to worry about it stretching out or whatever, so that's why I buy it. I'm assuming people also buy in based on durability, possibly.
I think that there's some of that. My general rule for the consumer of the masses, so mm-hmm. golfers across the country, is gloves are purchased based on convenience. The same way golf balls are, by the way, which is a mistake.
Well, and most everything in our lives these days.
Yeah.
I mean, so think about it.
Online has changed it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but you don't. Most people don't realize they need a glove until they're at the golf course and
right.
they pull out this crusty thing that's been used for 5 months.
And it's flaking.
Yeah, it's got like a hole in the thing. And they're like, oh, I can make it one more round.
And it has like a funky odor because it's been in your bag in your car. Yeah.
And then at the turn, they realize that the whole thing is ripped down the thumb and they have to go get another glove. So they run into the pro shop. And what does the pro shop have? 9 times out of 10, it's FootJoy Titleist.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, and for what it's worth, I think that's a big reason why golf balls are the same thing.
For years
that dominated
green grass.
The segment. And when we say green grass, that means pro shops at a golf course.
Yes, sorry.
But I want to know from people why you do buy a glove. Like I tried the Caddy Daddy glove and I mentioned to the owner of Caddy Daddy, I think they have a flaw in their business model because the thing lasted like 6 months.
Yeah.
The claw glove.
Yeah.
It's weird to look at when you first get it. It's even weird to use the first couple of swings. And then you forget that it's different and you just play. And
right.
It's got great grip and it's perfect for humid conditions and things like that. But that was kind of my question. And I'm going to ask another question about a different piece of golf equipment later on why people buy it. But I want to know from you guys, like how do you choose your glove? Do you try different ones or did you find something you like and you never stray? Like I'm super curious about weird things. And this is one of those things.
I can see a lot of different scenarios of what people are going to say.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I really am curious about it. So we mentioned market share and it comes up a lot in the diehard golfer point of view comments, things like that. You know, the lunatic fringe that visits our forum and things like that. And that's a term of endearment, nothing else. Market share and how it's measured is a very unique thing because the world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, has market share adapted? I would say not to the extent it should or could.
Okay.
But
you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I'm going to. So when people think of market share, they think of we take every piece of equipment. Let's make up one. I got a wedge in front of me. Let's say wedges. And they take every piece of equipment in the wedge category that's sold and they determine who is the leader.
Sure. Makes sense.
That's not how it's done.
Really?
No. To do those measurements, you would be in some ways partnering with retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
And golf companies to get that.
Okay.
Well, the largest retailer in the country for golf is who?
Worldwide?
No. It's Dick's Sporting Goods.
Oh, that makes sense.
They are not part of the market share.
Really?
Really.
You know, I think I knew this, but yeah. I feel like I couldn't believe it, so I kind of blocked it out.
I want to change this. I don't mean change the market share. I want to make sure we deviate that market share is different things to different people. If I worked at fill in the blank golf company, TaylorMade Golf Company, and I'm looking at market share, I'm getting information sheets from online, from direct to consumer, from our website, from Dick's, from Golf Data Tech, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Greengrass Shops, everything else. They have that information. The information that is used a lot of times or touted and things like that is not that full.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to use company names here, but I'm going to call out one specifically, which is golf balls. And Titleist, there's no doubt, Titleist has dominated the golf ball category in sales for years.
Okay.
Yet, I spoke to somebody at Dick's Sporting Goods, this is a year ago conversation, and he said, they aren't the number one selling ball in our store. Meaning singular ball. Overall, they were, but singular ball, they
were
not.
And when you say our store, are you talking about that specific?
No, I'm talking about Dick's.
Okay, you're talking about the whole entire
so
company.
So you could make the case that, hey, the store, the retail store where people have, you know, if they go have a choice to shop, they were no longer number one.
Okay.
Now, this is a year ago. I have no idea. I haven't looked to see if that's the case, and I haven't talked to him in probably 90 days, which reminds me I need to shoot off a text message. But when we're talking about market share, how it's measured is, and I'm not an expert on this by any means, but there's two segments. There's off course and on course, and obviously combined. And then there's multiple segments inside of that, which are unit sold, dollar share, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So off course would be your retail stores.
Okay.
And I'm just naming some here, Edwin Watts, Roger Dunn, Golf USA, whatever it is,
right.
that are part of that survey. And then there's on course, which is going to be your green grass shops and everything else. Then there's units sold, which is exactly what it sounds like.
And then the units sold would be all encompassing. So it would be everybody.
No, it's still just part of those same stores being surveyed, mm-hmm. but the number of units, like the number of wedges that were sold, what the percentage is of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's revenue percentage, which is obviously if your item sells well at a higher dollar figure, you earn more of that percentage. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So
I think you've lost some people, but
I'm sure I have.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to answer questions based on my knowledge of it.
Right.
Again, no expert.
But we're going to have to get like a diagram.
Yeah. When you talk about market share and people wanting to know more of the business side, understand it's not a complete picture because we're never going to have a complete picture because, frankly, it's none of our business. But when it's used as a marketing tool, I think it's helpful. So when I refer to market share, I generally refer to off course because that's the stuff that I have info on more readily.
I would think that that's easier to get.
Now, another aspect is the information technically is private. It's for manufacturers to have. So it's something to consider. But as we dive into the business side of golf, I want people to understand a little more about it. So if you have questions on it, please feel free to ask and I'm happy to answer. But for instance, if you sell some, if TaylorMade sells 7 million putters on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
it's probably not going to move the market share number.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy.
Not, the online sales are not part of that, generally speaking, and unless that's changed in the last month.
I have to imagine as the years go on, that's going to change with how big online continues to grow.
Well, I would think it would.
I think it's
with
a harder
caveat in that I think that it's, again, these are the tool of market share data is for the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon supplies that manufacturing data to them directly,
yeah.
or that sales data directly. They don't need a survey to tell them how they're doing.
True.
So I'm not sure if it'll change, but from the aspect of market share and the information that even people like me have access to, not always, but can get access to at time to time, it's definitely a flawed system, but it does paint a pretty good picture.
Mm-hmm.
There are areas that are not even part of it. And I don't think grips, for instance, are part of it.
At all?
No.
Really?
They might be. I've never seen that segment.
Time to research it.
Well, I think grips are an underthought of or overthought of part of the equipment side of it.
For sure. I would agree with that.
So underthought of from the aspect of millions of golfers play whatever comes on their clubs.
Yeah.
And end of story.
Yeah. Usually the putter grip can get changed. But
yeah.
beyond that, you don't really see people switching grips too often until they're worn out.
And then there's segments that gravitate towards styles. For instance, if you go to the Villages, mm-hmm. and I'm going to make backtrack before I even get to the grip side. The area of the Villages can impact golf market share by upwards of a full percentage point.
I believe that.
Let that sink in. One area of 15 square miles, maybe
yeah,
more.
Yeah, but what is it, like 120,000
residents? Yeah, and 75,000 of them are golfers. They could, I have no data to back that up. I'm fairly confident with the people I've talked to that it's probably even more than 1%, but they could impact an entire market share segment by a full percentage point. Which we're talking about all the golf equipment sold. So let that sink in for a second. Funny story about that. We did a story in a newsletter and their golf ball sales are very different than what you might see at going to Pebble Beach, let's say.
Sure.
Different demographics and everything else. So I find that fascinating and I think it might be an ignored subject. But neither here nor there. But going back to the grips, if you go to a place like the Villages, you're going to find softer grips that are more wrap style.
Sure.
You know, golfers grew up that way. Their hands aren't probably as good anymore. I know that feeling as mine are going.
Oh, yeah, same.
So they like that wrap style. Whereas if you go to hot, humid conditions or really hot conditions, you'll find more corded grips or multi-compounds.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you go out on tour where they change them frequently, you're going to find more tour velvet than every other grip out there.
Right.
But again, I'm way off on a tangent here because
that's okay.
My question about grips is, why don't you try other things? And this all spurred because I have a friend who plays Golf Pride multi-compound grips.
Mm-hmm.
And he has since they've come out. And he's never tried anything else, really. Why?
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's always that person that says...
Switch the camera.
Sorry. I keep forgetting. There's always that person that says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's sort of the thing. So if it works for me, then I'm not going to change it. Why am I going to mess with a good thing? But there's always the, well, what if there's something better? Or, you know, technology just does change. But yeah. I think it's the if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of situation, which is pretty funny given that most golfers are tinkerers.
That is exactly where I was going, where these people will change everything down to the shaft to change 100 RPMs of spin, and they'll want to try every single piece of equipment that comes out and then never change the grip because, oh, well, it works for me. I like it.
Yeah, that is true. They'll buy putters that have like, you know, 4 or 5 different weight changes that they can do and, you know, all the adjustable drivers and all the adjustable clubs that they can get, but they don't change their grips. That's very true.
And it's the one piece of the golf equipment you're actually touching.
Yeah.
So this all started because one of our staff members, James, did a story on a Lamkin multi-compound grip. Multi-compound meaning two different compounds and this ST hybrid grip. And I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, holy crap, this is the best grip I've ever used.
Yeah, I think he said that in his review as well, that it completely blew his mind.
And as a person who used Tour Velvets pretty much for the last 10 years and dabbled in multi-compound from a different manufacturer, I didn't think I would like it, but my goodness, I tried it and I fell in love with it.
Right.
So it got me thinking of trying other grips. And of course, now I have a drawer and I'm testing out every grip in the sun. And I'm still coming back to that grip. But as golf equipment changes and we have this expectation of technology changing over and over and over again in equipment, why wouldn't we expect it in grips? Why would we expect that the same grip that I liked 15 years ago is the best one for me right now?
That's a very good question. I honestly don't know. I mean, like I said, I know people are, you know, they're a little nervous about change. But if you're going to go out and you're going to change all your clubs, you're going to change your golf ball, maybe your golf glove, why not change your grips? And I wonder, too, if people don't know how to do it and they don't want to take the hassle of going and getting them changed. What about that?
I think that that's probably a big part of it. Changing one grip is harder in a lot of ways than buying a new wedge.
Right.
So while it's not, I understand that aspect of it, that you can't just, you know, those little display things. I think we have one in the office that has all the grips on it from a brand and you can pick it up. It's not the same.
No. And then there's also, okay, well, I know that I like something facing down and I like 2 wraps and I like this and I like that. And so you're very particular about your grips. And let's just say that like it's perfect. Like you've got your clubs and your grips and they're perfect. Do you really want to change them? What if they do get changed, but then like the tape isn't right or something's not right and it doesn't feel the same, because then you could feel like your whole game is off. So it could be one of those like mental OCD type things.
That's a big part of it. Now, I will say that golfers in general, in my opinion, the lunatic fringe golfers, the ones that are THPers, the ones we love, they have FOMO when it comes to golf equipment.
Yes. Oh, yes. You know, absolutely.
They want to try everything. And listen, I can't blame them. I do.
Listen, we appreciate it. It's why we're in business.
We love it. We love the fact that you want to try everything. I want to try every single thing that comes out. Shaft, club, putter, ball, whatever, you know, clothing, everything else.
Yeah.
Love that. But now I want to try all the grips because I keep testing them and I'm finding some different things here and there. Like the amount of torque that's in a grip. Crazy. Who would have thought? We'd measure torque by degrees in shafts and people get all up in arms and then they throw a soft grip that moves all around when you're moving. Like, there's so much to it that I implore each person to try one new grip this coming year. See if you like it. It should be the Lamkin ST Hybrid. Just throwing that out there. If you're a multi-compound user, because it might be a better option. But seriously, it's worth a try.
Okay, so quick question. If you're going to suggest, okay, go ahead and try to change a grip, which club should they do? If they're just going to, instead of doing their whole set, let's just say like we should try it on this. It's like baby steps.
If I was going to choose one singular club, it would be driver.
Okay.
It's the one that you have the most violent swing and impact with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the one that would give them the best case scenario. Now, you could make the case that, oh, well, it's not a feel shot, in which case you could go with a lob wedge,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that you might use in different spots because of the way you might manipulate the club head, meaning open it, close sure. it, things like yeah. that. You could try that too. But I would definitely go with one of those two extremes, driver or the wedge you use around the greens.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So we've talked about all that stuff and about change and how golfers struggle with change. You have a recipe this week that I thought I was going to struggle with change because it's healthy. And it's one of my all-time favorites.
Yes, this has been in our rotation for, I don't know, probably 2 years now. I make this all the time. And I know that there's a couple forum members because I posted this on our forum a couple of times now too. And I know that a few of them have made it. And it's a turkey meatloaf. First of all, let me just say, I hate meatloaf. I really do. My mom used to make meatloaf all the time when I was a kid and I've always hated it. But I decided I was going to give it a try.
Did anybody hate meatloaf?
I just didn't really like it. I don't know. But this one is, it's made with turkey. You could do ground beef, but honestly, you don't need to. Like, there's something about doing it with the turkey. It's delicious.
I cannot tell you guys enough before she gets into it. This is a mind-bending, fantastic meal.
Yeah. I'm glad that he likes it so much because I do really, and it's easy. It's so easy. Like, you literally just throw everything into a bowl, mush it all around, shove it on a pan, throw it in the oven. You're done. And it's so simple. You probably have all the ingredients in your house anyway.
Probably not the turkey for our audience.
Well, maybe they do. You don't know that. But it's basically, you're going to put like a little, your homemade barbecue sauce on top of it. And it kind of like caramelizes up and it's just really good. And so when I did used to eat my mom's meatloaf, no offense, mom, you're actually a really good cook. I just really don't like meatloaf. But I had to like cover it in ketchup or something, like anything just to like cover up the taste of meatloaf itself. But this one, I don't put anything with it. And I think it reheats really well the next day. I always make a double batch. I always double the recipe and make more of it. Oh, also, the original recipe called for marjoram, which it's not a spice that I use a ton. So I've always swapped it out for Italian seasoning, but you can put whatever you want in there. But other than that, it's just really easy. And I hope you guys enjoy it because it is a regular in our rotation.
Well, that is a good one. I think that the audience, if they get a chance to try it out, and you'll post it up on the forum.
For sure.
Is going to love that one. And it's a healthier alternative.
It is. It absolutely is. It truly is healthy. The macros, let me come back here for a second. The macros are wonderful on it. For those who don't know what a macro is, it's the macronutrients. So you're talking about like your protein, your fat, and your carbs. And they're phenomenal in this recipe.
So we've been talking offline, off the show about broadcasts and TV and things like that. And you brought up an interesting point about the Masters app.
Uh-huh.
And how it is pretty much the end-all be-all for sports coverage, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say that it's sort of like the, I would call it like the app mecca. Like,
yeah.
You know, it is truly like, as far as sports apps goes, I think it's better than like a fantasy football app. Like,
yes.
I think that what it offers is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'll go a step further and say it's the best there is in anything.
Yes.
But you asked me a question, which is, if you could have that coverage year round,
mm-hmm.
would golfers, I don't want to say want it, would they pay for it?
Yeah, because I think that it would have to be something that's paid for.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that it would take the special off of the Masters if it was like that? Or do you think maybe it's just for the majors? Like, how do you think it should play out?
See, that's the question. And that's kind of what I've been trying to figure out. Does it take, because the Masters is the Masters. So it's,
and it's the rite of passage to golfers
yes.
for the year to me, because it's the beginning of spring.
Yes. So this is the question that I have. And this is why I was asking that, is would people pay for it? And then do you pay for it? Do you do it all season long, or do you just do it for the majors? Would that maybe be different? I honestly don't know. I think that it's an interesting thought, though.
It's kind of funny because for years we were DirecTV customers.
Yes.
And for the Masters, you know, they have a bunch of different channels. You can watch a bunch of different things, basically mirroring the app.
You get like the quad box.
Yeah. Yet I still went to the app and threw it on the TV.
Every single time. I did the exact same thing.
Because to me, it's the perfect experience, and there's never a hiccup, which is even more mind-blowing.
I know. How do they do that?
It's because I saw him at the hotel, and he was there and everything else.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, we want to hear from you guys. Would you, if the Masters all of a sudden said the app is $4.99 a year, to use it for the tournament, would you pay for it? And if it was available on other... You're going to make people dizzy.
I know. Sorry. Well, I thought you were done talking. I was going to say something.
If it was available for other tournaments as an add-on, let's say for $5, you could add it on to be able to watch. Now, obviously, the company doing it would need a lot of subscribers because you're talking about having crews, production crews and announcers at all different spots of the course. So you'd need a lot of people opt in. But would it be something golfers would be interested in?
Yeah. So I was going to say that too. It was going to be two things I was going to say was that if you did do something like that, obviously you need to have more coverage. So you need to have more people out there covering it. So it would the cost of it would have to work out to be able to pay for that additional staff. I don't want to say staff isn't the word I'm looking
production.
For. Production. Yeah. Production crew. Exactly.
Yeah.
But then I was also going to say, let's not give the... I thought he was going to sneeze. He looked like he was about to sneeze.
No, just yawning.
I don't want them to charge for the Astros app, so I don't want to give them any ideas.
I'd give them $5 a year.
You know what, though? I actually would because I mean, it's that good. It's worth it. Really is. It truly is worth it.
So watching golf through that app changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
But food can change everything also.
Oh, absolutely.
We talked about this recently at one of the events about football has a food.
Yeah, pizza and wings.
Yes, and I made the joke that I think tacos would be the perfect football food in reality because easy to hold, different toppings, everything else. It's easy.
Sure, makes sense. A little messy though.
But what does golf have?
See, this is what we were talking about because baseball, you have like hot dogs, right? Like if you go to a baseball game or even if
you're dogs and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know that hockey really has anything. Maybe popcorn.
Poutine,
I always ate
probably or Tim Hortons or something. Cause when it's Canadian.
Growing up, when I used to go to the Panthers games, I always got chicken fingers. They had the best chicken fingers.
That's not true.
No, it is true. They did. They really did. Yeah. And I also equate those little Carvel hats with the for baseball.
It's not a hat.
It's
a helmet.
Okay, the little you guys know what I'm talking about. The little helmet where they put the Carvel in it for baseball games. I love that. But for golf.
I mean, I think when you ask most people, they would say pimento cheese sandwiches.
Well, yeah, I was going to say besides
but
pimento.
That's the Masters.
Exactly. That's strictly the Masters. So then what is a golf food? Do you have any ideas? Because I don't know.
Well, I feel like it's very different because unlike most sports that are viewable, most golf is playable. So I feel like for this creation, we're going to have to come up with something that is both for while watching and while playing.
Here's another question. People tend to congregate and watch baseball games, football games, things of that nature together, right? Like tailgating.
Yeah.
You don't really do that for golf.
No. It's usually people sitting in a chair waiting for golfers to walk by.
In my head right now, all I'm picturing is like an old man eating pretzels. Like that's, I don't know why. And that's probably so not,
horrible.
Not PC by any means, but this is what I'm picturing right now is golf food is like
are these pretzels making him thirsty?
They probably are, but pretzels are delicious. One of my favorite foods.
But so we need to come up with the idea of both for playing and for watching, but focus on the watching. We need the perfect golf food.
Yes. Because
we challenge everybody.
My God. So here's what happened. I don't switch it enough, and now I'm switching it too much. I'm terrible at my job.
She said it.
I'm
so
fired.
What do you guys think is the ultimate golf viewing food? Is it different based on where the tournament is? I mean, if they're in New England, do you want lobster rolls? Where is it Augusta? You want pimento cheese? What is the perfect viewing food? Or is it just, well, it's pizza and wings for all sports, and that's just the way I am?
Oh, that's true. I guess people could be like that. But I don't want it to be like that. I want golf to have its own food category.
I agree with you.
Let's create this, people. We can do it.
So while that is fun, one thing that's not fun in this amazing segue, how good did I just nail that?
I don't even know where we're going.
Looking for golf balls.
Oh, that was pretty good.
So when you're at a THP experience, many times there'll be a four caddy.
Sure.
And that four caddy will find everything. If you lose a sleeve of balls with a four caddy, I mean, minus water, obviously, at places like Victoria National, you're in a rough day. And there's places on courses like Dormy and Ballyhack where you can lose a lot of balls, but these guys find everything. Then you go to the next day where we don't have the four caddies.
Yeah.
And you watch people look for balls, and it's like 7, 8, 10 minutes, and we're like, oh my God, I'll give you a dozen. Just please hurry up and hit it.
I know.
I'm not speaking to that of our groups because they moved along pretty well.
This is in general.
General. How long do you look for a ball?
Oh, okay. So, me personally?
You don't.
I but don't. Well,
we're not fair because we don't pay for the golf balls.
It's not even that. When I used to play golf, I can't follow the ball. I'd hit the ball, and then as soon as it went, I had no idea where it went. So, if I wasn't with somebody who could...
She's allowed to drive, folks.
What the heck is that supposed
to
mean?
You can't see.
I can't see. I can't see the ball. For some reason, I hit the ball and I just have no idea where it goes. So unless there's somebody with me, then I just move on because I kind of maybe have an idea, but usually I can't ever find my golf ball. So I just move on.
I always wonder, as the cost of balls have gone up, the time to look for them has gone up as well.
Yeah, which, I mean, it is expensive.
You know, makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
Golf balls will be at that $60 dozen, $5 price point at some point. I'm 100% confident in that.
Me too.
The amount of work that's going into making them combined with demand and everything else, it's going to happen. There are some that are already out there at that price, but how long do you look? Is it a quick kind of graze over in the woods like the goats picking the grass, eating the grass? Or are you in there stomping around knowing that you got to find it because it's got to be found?
This is again where they should have the, the vending machines, but this time like put them at like every three holes.
Yeah.
Which is like holding a golf ball.
Yeah, just a sleeve. Here's a sleeve, $10. Yeah. Are you out yet?
Exactly.
We are transitioning from fall to winter.
Oh, you mean from summer to fall?
Well, no, I mean, we're going to be close here. Summer to fall has already happened.
True.
I'm talking about this transition that's coming up here. I know, because we're in Florida. Fall to winter's here.
Yeah.
We're going to be here shortly. What, in Florida, and in a lot of parts in Tennessee as well, even though we had snow and stuff there, we didn't really have to make that transition, so to speak.
No, not really. Oh, the beanie. I love the beanie.
And possibly a... I'll call it a quarter zip, but you know, I'm not talking about the wool quarter zip, you know, the
lightweight
performance quarter zip.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But what in the parts of the region or of the US that is truly transitioning to winter?
Mm-hmm.
I know that they have their greens getting punched.
Like Dan posted.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He posted a picture. He actually started a thread about it and he posted a picture.
So it's happening all over the place. How do you transition to winter golf? Both mentally and from a purchasing standpoint?
It's a good question. I'm assuming that a lot of hand warmers start to get purchased.
I would think that that's probably a good one. I know that layering obviously makes a ton of sense.
Oh, yeah.
But what I'm talking about is completely different than that.
Okay.
How crazy is this?
I'm listening.
What are the equipment purchasing tendencies during the winter? There's a reason I ask.
Equipment purchasing tendencies during the winter.
Have you noticed that almost all golf equipment comes out in the winter?
I did. I mean, I always knew release cycles, but I never really...
I mean, it comes out most of them in January.
Yes.
And the ones that are fall releases come out September, August, you know, going towards that.
To me, I always thought it sort of was about the PGA show.
No, not for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's really twofold. Number one, the most populated golf areas are the Sun Belt areas, you know, your California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, Georgia, those areas. That's golf season for them.
Oh yeah. Cause it's gorgeous.
And every week we'll hear a new thing during this is why are they releasing something now? I have to put my clubs up for 4 months. Well, not everybody is that way. The off season in Florida is when you were playing golf. And the current season is the opposite. So there is that.
Right. So here's my question, though, going back to that really quick. I know you said not in several years, but wasn't it originally kind of around the PGA show that it kind of started like that? Or am I totally off here?
No, I think there's some truth to that. I think the PGA merchandise show that happens every January was a big part of kicking off equipment because you had media and purchasers, mm-hmm. meaning pro shop people and stores that were all independent, all in one place. So you have a captive audience to show your wares. The digital age has changed that. I mean, it hasn't been that way in 10 years, probably 15 years.
Yeah, I meant, did it start like that and they kind of just kept it?
Well, last year was the first PGA show we've ever missed.
It was.
And we did everything virtually, but we haven't had new releases that we, meaning industry, haven't known about since we've been doing this in 15 years.
Right.
You know, there'll be a surprise here and there, but that's about it. And I think releases are the release cycles are changing. I remember a number of years ago, we made mention that both Ping and Titleist were kind of changing their release cycles. It wasn't going to be every 2 years like mm-hmm. people thought. They were going to divide and conquer. So every company has new releases every single year. Let's just state that for what it is.
Okay.
It's whether or not they release a whole line or a partial line. Or,
sure.
Or if it's a brand like a Callaway, for instance, that has the Epic and Apex, and then they have the Rogue, you know, and they run alternate years if mm-hmm. they release that. So it's every company kind of does things a little differently. But and new releases are a good thing. Choices are a good thing.
Always.
Every consumer product in the world has new releases every year at some level. But when I'm transitioning to the winter months, do the people in those winter months, do they pay more attention to golf equipment on places like ours? Less? Are they more interested? I'm asking you guys because we don't really know. I mean, we know based on data, but I want to hear directly from our audience. Are you interested in the new releases that come out in December and January more than you would be in April and May or June?
That's a great question. I've wondered that for many years now, actually.
I can say, based strictly on the data that I get,
mm-hmm.
that more golf equipment is purchased in April and May than every other time of year.
Which, in my head, makes sense.
I mean, you have the Masters combined with springtime.
Oh, the Masters too, yeah.
Combined with golf seasons kicking off for a large part of the country, and the weather is still really good in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, the weather is actually perfect in that time.
So by releasing in December, January, and February with a product time there, you have enough time to train your sales agents, mm-hmm. inform retail store clerks across an entire country, and more. So just keep that in mind when you're looking for it. We've gone on way too long on this crappy show today.
I know. I was looking at the time.
So I'm going to sign off beforehand. Don't forget BarkBox. Go to www.barkbox.com/THPGolf and get a free month added to your subscription. Morgan, we had fun this week. Next week, we are coming back live.
Live.
And
very exciting.
Possibly from a hotel room.
Or somewhere.
We haven't decided this yet, but it's going to be live and you're not going to want to miss it. We're going to have a lot of info about 2023 stuff that is going to surprise people.
That's exciting.
So for myself and Morgan, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network.
Your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.